You want prizes? We've got free prizes. You want cash? We've got lots of cash. Simply download Bashani Radio app. Allow push notifications and listen for your chance to win loads of cash. Please don't tell our CEO it's his money we're giving away. We won't tell if you won't tell. Bashani Radio app. Download it for free in the App Store.
You are now listening to the Black Tech Matters podcast, and we're bringing you the most exclusive and profound conversations surrounding black people and technology. We're talking everything black tech, science, business, mental health, finance, and fitness. And now let's get into the show.
All right, Black Tech Matters podcast, episode 3. We have Leo Bridgewater here with us. Leo is one of the leaders in the cannabis space, and not just for the African-American community, but just for the cannabis community, period. Leo has some really interesting things going on. I met him at a conference about a year and a half ago. We kept in touch periodically, and I always wanted to speak to him and have a conversation once I knew I was starting the podcast. Leo's a great guy, and he's an innovator. And I would just like to start and say I appreciate you for having me on. I consider this maybe even a special edition because of the initiative that you have going. I think it's going to change a lot of things for a lot of people. And Leo, just introduce yourself and tell us what you do, what you're about, and what you have going.
Wow. First off, let me say, I really wish my son could have been here to hear that. If I was white, I'd be red from blushing. Thank you. You know what I'm saying? Thank you.
Yeah, man, I give you your flowers while you're here, you know?
Man, you know what, bro? I so appreciate that because I swear, you know, in my household, my 14-year-old thinks I'm corny and my 4-year-old talks to me like I'm small. So, you know, like when someone says nice things like that, I'd be like, ooh, I wish they could hear this.
Well, you know, kids think you're corny until they become adults and some of the stuff that you kept telling them. And then it starts to happen in the back of their head. And then certain situations start to manifest where that advice, that little voice of yours, is telling them which fork in the road to take. And when they take that correct fork and they knew if they didn't have that advice, they would have took that other fork. That's when you become cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's not going to happen right away. But just know that it is going to happen down the road.
But you want to know something, though? As I travel in this cannabis journey right now,
right.
It keeps me grounded. You know what I'm saying?
True.
It keeps me grounded.
Well, I'm just saying there's power. There's power, you know, in being a black father that's productive. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have conversations in a different way, in a different approach that other fathers of other races don't necessarily have to have. You have to have those same conversations, and then you have to have different conversations, right? And so being that you have the experience that you have and you're so well traveled, you know, it's like you're not the average black father or even the average white or whatever Asian and Hispanic father. Like, you had so many different experiences, and then the things that you were trying to do, it's almost like your son is not even just like a father-son relationship. It's almost probably like more of a mentor mentee if he's interested in whatever industry that you're looking at going into. Because if, from what you told me, and I'm not going to tell people what it is, but if what you tell me happens, then you will be on the Mount Rushmore of, you know, black leaders who've spearheaded something that was important, not just for our community, but for the entire United States. And on top of that, there is another plan of action in place to where we can participate in the fruits of your leadership, right? It's not just that you're trying to get marijuana descheduled, and I'll let you talk about it because I'm not super educated on it. I did read an article. I did do some research, but I ain't you, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the fact that you're trying to do that is for the entire country, but the fact that there is a plan in place for us to participate, that's what puts you on the Mount Rushmore of black leaders. Because for me, when I saw that Illinois and Chicago didn't have a plan in place for African-American dispensary ownership, and then the fact that African-Americans in that city, which I'm from, didn't even feel that they had a real chance to pre-plan once they said they were making marijuana legal and they were going to offer dispensary licenses or whatever it is, the same way that we pre-plan for, you know, affirmative action, you just need affirmative action in the cannabis business. Listen, there will be no licenses issued if I was in charge or if I was a politician there, if there isn't something in place already. Because when they build a jail, they got a jail. They got that shit planned out. They like, okay, if people get these type of crimes, these type of misdemeanors, or they commit these type of infractions, or they don't pay these fines, then this is what's going to happen to them, right? Mm-hmm. They already have that predetermined. We have to have this particular amount of people that have to go through this particular diversion program, this particular probationary period, pay these particular fines, or go, or actually be incarcerated, because like there's a system. But then you don't have the foresight and the intellect to create another system when it's something that could be beneficial and quantify out to something way bigger for the community and keep people out of jail. You know what I'm saying? And then like there's the fact of the, I don't even know if it's just them per se. I'm like, where are we? You know, where are we? Like, you telling me, like, I didn't live in Chicago. I was in New York, right? And I was thinking like, man, if I was in that city and I was successful and I had a liquor store, maybe the dudes who had liquor stores, who had friends who were weed specialists, maybe they would get first dibs. Like, you already own a business that's kind of like, you know, something that people consider a vice or whatever you want to call it, even though cannabis isn't really a vice to me. The government made it a vice or made it viewed as a vice, but I don't think it's a vice, right? I think it's a health product, right? And so, or maybe, you know, I don't know what the process could be, but I know whatever they did, they failed us and they failed their community, because for that to be a majority Democratic city and supposed to be a progressive city, if not the most progressive and successful city in the Midwest, and to have all the murders that it has, right? To have all the racism and segregation that it has, and for them to have two progressive mayors that said they were progressive, which is, what was it, Rahm Emanuel,
who knows the government. And then Lightfoot. Yep.
I'm like, man, is there a lack of intelligence somewhere that I'm missing? Or is there a lack of care from the people who institute these? Or is there a really a conspiracy? And I hate saying that word. Or is there a unconscious bias to where we're not even thought of when it's something that's going to be good and viewed as that could be extremely successful?
Okay, so let me help you out with something. Let me give you a perspective that, you know, particularly one that I could offer out. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Oh, first tell us who you are.
I didn't do that yet.
No, you did. I'm sorry. I went on a little tangent.
Oh, yeah. I thought I did. Okay. Well, oh yeah. So hi everybody. I'm Leo Bridgewater. I am the Chief Innovation Officer for CWCB Education. I'm also the National Director of Veterans Outreach with Minorities for Medical Marijuana. I live in Trenton, New Jersey. And, you know, some history. I testified in Senate committee to have post-traumatic stress disorder added as a qualifying condition to the New Jersey Medical Marijuana Program. And in 2016, then Governor Chris Christie signed our bill into law, S2345. And at that time, you know, PTSD was the only mental health qualifying condition to enroll in order to be able to be enrolled in the medical marijuana program. Since then, I'm also one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the Department of Justice to have cannabis completely scheduled. You know, it's myself, another veteran friend of mine named Jose Belen, a young lady named Alexis Bartel, and Marvin Washington, ex-NFL player, along with our lawyers. You know, shout out to Hiller PC, Mike Hiller, Joe Bondi, Lauren Ruddick, Zach Taylor, everybody down there. Nelson Guerrera, Jake Plowden, you know, Amanda Reyes. So all these people, Canada Cultural Association, the group I'm a part of as well, we got together and we sued the Department of Health, Department of Justice. And so at the time, Jeff Sessions was the person who was in charge. So, and now what ended up happening was this past June, our case was dismissed with extreme prejudice by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals out of the Southern District of New York. And we, and now clearing the way for us to, now our case is being reviewed to be, we're waiting to see if we're going to, our case is going to be accepted to be decided on by the Supreme Court. So, you know, and that was the latest in the last, you know, few weeks or what have you. So
wow.
Those were some of the elements that you were alluding to when you were saying making, you know, significant changes, because if we get this completely descheduled, you know, we're our case is that it's unconstitutional for cannabis to be a Schedule I drug. And one of the things that they wanted to do was like, they talked about, you know, okay, then we'll just make it a Schedule II. No. That's still problems. You'll be creating other kinds of problems for us. No, we want it off, you know. And so that's where we are right now. And so we're just waiting to hear the you know, because right now cannabis is a Schedule I drug officially, as far as the United States government is concerned. Cannabis is listed on the Controlled Substance Act by the department, by the DEA, is a Schedule I drug, which means that it's extremely addictive and has zero medicinal value. Okay. Now you got 41 states that, or 39 states, something like that, that have actual medical marijuana programs. So how is cannabis a Schedule I drug with zero medicinal value, but you got all these states that got these medical marijuana programs? As you see, you know, we're starting to recognize that the time for oxymoronic politics is going to be over. And so that's what we're gunning for now.
Awesome. And so back to,
your
statement you were about to make after I went on my little, you know, my little tangent. So.
And then I follow up with going on my own, talking about me.
Nah, it's cool. This is about you, not me, but go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So here's the thing. You know, I have to look at, because of the various positions in which I hold and the things that I get to see, I have to continue my camera lens on the my view on the cannabis industry as a whole is always at a wide angle. Okay. And so because of that, you know, I also have to think in terms of macro and micro level. You know, you have to think on a micro and a macro level. Now, that being said, I have to revert back to the things that I know. You know, like I know I have to, in order to get things done, I have to revert back to the way I was taught to do things. And so having, you know, spent a massive amount of time, you know, in the military, working for people like General David Petraeus, working for Admiral Mullins, working for General Lynch, working for all these different generals and seeing them make the decisions that they have to make, because my actual career field is DoD telecommunications. So I would be in these high-level meetings listening to these men make decisions that I don't care what your lot in life is, you just don't want to be a part of. You know, some really scary decisions at that. And understanding that, you know, those types of environments where the operational tempo is really, really high, you know, it requires a type of critical thinking that would have macro and micro type effects.
Right.
And so looking at the cannabis industry and what all I have to fight with, particularly here in New Jersey, right? So I have to think in terms of, okay, who has, you know, who are you most like, for instance, in the city of Trenton, Trenton is the example, but it's just a microcosm of the rest of the country. In the city of Trenton, there are 38,000 registered voters, okay? Out of that 38,000, the last time we had an election for a mayor and a city council, only 8,000 people voted. So what are our problems here in the city of Trenton? Because the capital city is only 7.2 square miles. That's it. And you have a population of about 100,000. Officially, it's 86,000, but we push in 100 or a little over 100 when you add the people that's off the books, okay? Right. And so within a 7.2 square mile radius, you got over 100,000 people packed in there. Not to mention, you know, only 38,000 of them are actual registered voters. You know, take away the kids, you know what I'm saying? So out of that 38,000, only 8,000 people made the decisions of leadership here.
Yeah, voter participation, I think a lot of people are jaded. I think a lot of people...
I was just about to say, so we have a lot of people here who have checked out of their most basic of civic responsibilities. You know what I'm saying? Now, whatever there's all kinds of variables that made it so, but I'm dealing with the what is. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's right now?
Well,
right
you know what now, it is?
Listen, I know the variables. That's what I said. Right. I know the different variables and theories on how we got here.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? I've made my peace with that. Now I'm working on the next steps.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And what are the lessons learned from all those other variables? You see what I'm saying? Now, one of the things that we have in this city is a quality of leadership issue. So not only do we have a voter participation problem, but we also have a quality of leadership issue as well. You see what I'm saying? Now, all this sounds familiar, right? Even when you apply those two factors to Chicago, Philadelphia, you know, New York, anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Right. Especially as it relates to our community.
Right.
Now, when you add in, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm dealing in a industry that was literally built on the backs of people who look like me. You know what I'm saying? Now, how has that translated into the legitimate industry? Well, the way it's translated is we make up less than 1% of ownership in this industry.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry, we make up less than, I think it's like 3% ownership or some shit like that.
The number is.
It ain't enough. Low. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and we also have an education issue as well, because when you look at the industry as a whole, all roads lead back to education or lack thereof. The number one hardest group of people to talk to about cannabis and the industry is Black church people. Because most people don't realize Black church people are way more conservative than what you would see on Fox News. You just don't hear about it. And then the number two hardest group of people.
Can I touch on that real quick?
Absolutely.
What's the line between conservative and ignorance?
Mm.
Because to me, if you're conservative, then you have to be conservative across the entire spectrum, across the board. But you can't pick and choose what you want to be conservative about just because you're ignorant about something. Like if you choose not to be educated about something that can help your congregation, make your congregation money, and then on top of that, the majority of you probably smoke reefer or whatever you want to call it, marijuana, cannabis, or you know somebody who has and they haven't done anything wrong, but all of you drink libations, as you call them.
Uh-huh.
All of you, and you know that's affected a lot of people in your family. Right. And a lot of you have done other drugs. Right. And have to have drug outreach programs. I mean, the Black church is the first line of defense for a lot of people in a lot of communities. Right.
Well, Black church is traditionally viewed as the gatekeepers to the African-American community.
Right. But I think that that's changed in about the last 5 to 10 years because of the lack of evolution in not only the political aspect, but the financial aspect, which
when you look at the current racial and political climate of this country,
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're starting to see a particular type of awakening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's questioning. Yeah, and it's question, and but with that awakening, it's also questioning traditional methods.
Right, because I think being a minority in any country, no matter what your race is, but specifically for us, because we bear the brunt of so much, right? Yeah. Anti-Black racism, right? It's a science, right? I think the majority of us have to start thinking from a scientific aspect and not an emotional or spiritual. Well, I don't want to say not spiritual, because you could be spiritual. But to me, thinking of just from like the church aspect is what, you know, is going to make you more emotional than technical. Well, right?
Here's the thing. Think this.
Okay.
The second hardest group of people to talk to about this is Black people.
Right.
And that's because we're largely suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder over the illegality of the plant.
Right.
You think about the illegality, it has broken up homes. It's killed people. It's gotten us thrown in jail.
Well, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing.
Financial issues. Because you got to pay so much.
Well, so
to deal with lawyers, whatever you want to call it.
So who's witnessing, you know what I'm saying? Who's witnessing all of this play out on Black people? Black church people.
Yeah.
With their conservative ideology. Not to mention the miseducation. We're talking about 49 years of miseducation on cannabis. You see what I'm saying? Not to mention we're 80-something years behind when it comes to Harry Aislinger and all them. You see what I'm saying? 83 years. This has been a Schedule I drug since 71. You see what I'm saying?
Right, but my point is this. You can't choose what to be conservative on. If you're conservative, you're conservative. But when you do something because you don't understand it or because it's something that the next generation can harness, you got to remember, you got generational hate. And I think if this would have been in the 60s or 70s, an issue for them that they were trying to push, then it wouldn't be that much conservative behind it. But we have to stop, you know, the generational hate of certain things. Like, you know what? They all know that marijuana is cool. Cannabis is cool. Even for the ones who think it ain't cool, they still know it is in their hearts, right? So, but it's not their generation's, it's not their cause. It's our generation's cause. But the stuff that I've seen our churches tolerate and perpetuate is no way that equates to how conservative you are with cannabis, right? And usually I wouldn't even say this publicly.
It's oxymoronic.
It is, man.
It's an oxymoronic type of politics that is not, I personally do not have the bandwidth to engage with at this time. You see what I'm saying? So one of the biggest issues as I see it today being, you know, September 2020, you know, is that, you know, we're six, seven weeks away from voting for adult use here in New Jersey, right?
Right.
And New Jersey, should New Jersey fall for adult use, and if done right, New Jersey could leapfrog everybody and go straight to number two behind California.
Right.
In terms of revenue. And the reason being is because we have a population of 9 million people and we get 110 million visitors a year.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact.
I used to go to Jersey all the time when I lived in Harlem. Cross over that bridge.
And I was about to say, not to mention the fact that we are sandwiched between Philadelphia and the number one cannabis consuming city in the world, which is New York. Karachi, right. Pakistan is number two. New Delhi, India is number three.
Right.
Los Angeles is number six. And Chicago is number eight. Now, New York and Chicago did that with it being illegal.
Right.
So when you look at.
So how do they quantify the numbers? When it's illegal, when it's illegal, like how do they know which cities purchase the most? Are they figuring out who get busted or the most marijuana that's found on drug busts or something? They're like, okay, metric if it's tons. This many pounds, as this many metric tons are being found in this city, then it has to be one of the largest consumers of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so let's go back to this too. When you say dismissed with extreme prejudice, what does that mean?
The three judges, so our case was heard by a three judge panel, right? Right. And they dismissed our case. Us and the DEA had to present why we felt like we had exhausted all of the administrative efforts to get the DEA to deschedule cannabis.
Right.
And so the judges felt as though the reasons why the DEA hadn't descheduled cannabis at this point was very shaky. And so adding that language in terms of extreme prejudice brings heightened attention to it being reviewed by the Supreme Court.
Okay.
It's interesting you keyed in on that, you know, because that's never happened before in previous attempts.
Right, that's what I was saying. You hear cases dismissed with prejudice and without, and they say with extreme prejudice.
Extreme prejudice, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep. So when you guys, what's the process of waiting for the Supreme Court to hear your case? Like, how long does it take, or what steps do you have to take to move forward?
We should know in the next year. We should know sometime within the next year, you know, because they have these cycles where they hear cases.
Way that you can use technology? Because I'm not going to say this, and I'm not 100% sure. In the Biden presidency, I could see it happening, right? Because this contract with Black America that Ice Cube is talking about, and some of the other people that I think he's going to have a conversation with, I think cannabis is going to come up in the conversation. Now, in the second Trump presidency, to me, it's 50-50. But in the Biden presidency, I see it being like 70-30. Right?
So I have this theory.
What technology can we employ right now? And I didn't mean to cut you off. Mm-hmm. That in case this happens, like, I'd be willing to invest something, right? Some resources, some money to say, okay, if this happens, how can we use technology to create a ecosystem and an infrastructure where Black people are ready? We are ready. I'm talking about entrepreneurs who have the qualifications, who have the funding, and who have the training. And then on top of that, growers who have the funding and the resources. And then we got a trucking system or some type of train. I don't know if you can do trucking. You might have to do airplanes, right? Mm-hmm. But a transportation logistics system all set up into one. I don't know if we can do it through franchises. I don't know what, but it's like, you know, where does McDonald's get its, you know, its apple, its oranges for its orange juice, right? I mean, they have a system network of franchises, and those franchises have a distribution network, and then they have a supplier network. And I think we need to set up the same thing and use technology, which allows you to, you know, allows you to set up those infrastructures for a little bit less money than it would have costed in the 60s or the 70s, right? Or the early 80s.
So what you're talking about, and I'm about to piss you off now. I'm about to really piss you off now. So,
all right.
What you're talking about is pretty much from seed to cell. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And everything that it encompasses. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, like, one of the things I work on here with my business partner, Ryan Soto, is we work on creating independent economic ecosystems that feed off of cannabis businesses, because, you know, one of the barriers to entry that, you know, particularly Black and brown people have to deal with is finances. You know what I'm saying? Right. And what most people don't realize is that, you know, we're grossly, as a people, as a community, we are grossly behind in terms of this industry.
We need to set up the ETF.
Go ahead. Well, but here's the thing, you know, what people always, when I talk to 99% of the people that I talk to.
Shout out to Cannabinoid Sciences too, that I got to check into them and see where they're at. But I did get it from, an offer memorandum from a guy, Cannabinoid Sciences. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to shout them out, because there are people who do have the wherewithal and the resources and intellect to do it. I just don't know, you know, what type of support they're getting. And but go ahead, and I'm gonna shut up.
Well, all we do is all you have to do at this point, you know what I'm saying, is identify where we are at this time in time is, and I'm looking at the date here, you know what I'm saying? Where we are is and this is September 16th, 2020, right? So as of this day, you know, we are at the point where we have to mitigate the collateral damage of our absence in this industry. And what I mean by that is, you know, because as a whole, as people, as a community, we are so behind that now the way we mitigate that collateral damage is we start to uplift those brands that we know are ours. And what I mean by ours, meaning Black people, you know what I'm saying?
And then how do we reverse engineer the failure of Ignite, which was Dan Bilzerian's brand of cannabis?
Well, we stop. Look, that's why I'm telling you, we start looking at these actual individual entities that are already exist that look like us. For instance,
you know, that was huge failure.
Yeah. So like, for instance, look at, we were just talking about, you know, what happened in Illinois, you know, last week. You know, one of the people who did not receive an applicant is a 20-year-old African-American male born and raised in Chicago, who owns his own dispensary in Eugene, Oregon, and has 4 licenses in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And this man owns 100% of his company. He owns everything.
Yeah, and we need to invest in him.
And when I say he owns everything, he owns the buildings that his dispensary, his retail locations are in. He owns everything.
I don't even want to say his name on here right now. I want to talk to him first before you even say his name. Let me talk to him because, you know, he might not even want no attention. And I'm not saying I can give him that.
Oh, no, listen, attention. Listen, we, me and him, we, you know, like, he's like, you know, I have no problem saying this publicly, but, you know, he's, when I have 3 sisters, okay? Right. And when I was little, I used to pray for a little brother because they used to get on my nerves.
Of course. You know?
And he reminds me of, you know, the little brother that I used to wish for.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just because of, you know, how proud I am of him and how he's moving in this space. And so when he and I were talking about what happened in Illinois, and mind you, this is a conversation that's happened just a few days ago.
Right.
You know, and I told him, I said, yo, I didn't see you. I didn't see your name on the, you know, and he said, no, dog, he said, I didn't get it. He was like, you know, Hope Wiseman didn't get it. You know, he was started naming all the people that we knew, you know what I'm saying? Right. And I was like, damn. And he said, and this is what really caught my ear and why I said I was going to piss you off. He was like, and dog, I'm from Chicago. He was like, man, this is some bullshit. Like, he was like,
and he's 20.
28.
Oh, I thought you said he was 20. I was like, man, this dude, if he's 20, man, this is a genius for real, but 28 is still
genius.
A lot
to
accomplish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And
he needs to teach a course. I'll buy that course.
He does a lot of work with M for MM, and, you know, anytime, you know, like, one thing I love about this dude, you know what I'm saying, you know, like, I get him in ways that the general population doesn't, you know what I'm saying, right. But at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, in the context of this last conversation that we was having, I felt so bad for him because, you know, like, he's in the midst of a grand opening in Boston right now, okay? Right.
And, all right, so he's already a public figure then.
Well, it's not even so much that he's a public figure. That yes, he is. But
does he have a lot of followers on Instagram?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
What's his name?
Shayun Adetiji. He's the CEO and founder of Elevate Cannabis.
Shout out to Shayun Adetiji.
Shayun, yeah. Yeah.
Shout out to him.
Yeah, and what caught
big time
my ear
moves from him in that industry, which I like to see. And he's from the hometown.
And here's the crazy part. You know what I'm saying? Here's the crazy part. he is even at the point now where he is trying to get other people on. He has a franchising model. You understand what I'm saying? Where he doesn't even get equity in your dispensary. You just pay him a franchising fee, but he will help you. You see what I'm saying? And you know, like the thing that I keyed in on and talking to him and everything like that, listening to him, like he's in the midst of a grand opening in Boston, right? And you know, he's proud of himself, as he should be. I'm proud of him and everything like that. But dude, he was so hurt. He was hurt that he wasn't going to be able to come home. You understand what I'm saying?
That city is different.
Well, you know, like, and that's the thing, you know, because he's like, you know, and he said it, you know,
it's
different. Said, you know, like, he said, damn, Leo, he said, I own every aspect of my business. I do this shit right. I put out so much, like, I people don't realize how hard this is and how much I had to work. You know, and he was like, I'm one of the few only multi-state operators, which is a big thing you would need in terms of when you're filling out an application. You know what I'm saying? Like, this dude is a multi-state operator and totally 100% black owned. And they said no to him. And he's a native born son of Chicago.
That city different. I don't even want to talk about it right now, but because I got my own opinions, but I haven't lived there in a while, but I go back and visit and I have some type of business going there. But
well, this is the state of Illinois.
I know, what I'm saying? But listen, so, listen, Chicago run the state.
Okay. No, sir, you know. So yeah, shutting up. Yep. There's a reason why they call it the Windy City.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That wind blow all the way down to Champaign, Urbana, or whatever the capital. I don't even know. No, Champaign, Urbana is where the college is. Where was Abraham Lincoln from?
That's a history.
Don't worry about it. The capital of Illinois, which I forgot, and it's my home.
Springfield.
Springfield.
That's Springfield. Yeah, Springfield, Illinois.
All right, we fixed it. We figured it out. All right, you know, we're 20 years removed from high school. We don't have to know that shit. But yeah, I'm gonna hear about that one though. You know, I'm gonna hear about that one. Like, oh, for real? You don't know the cow? Okay. But anyway, so
for him,
for him to get denied, man. Listen, all right, that's a lawsuit within itself. If you ask me, somebody should be approved.
Well, we're just a little over a week out from this happening. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, I'm sure there's, you know, plenty of things to come out. And mind you, this was not even to get a license. This wasn't even to get a license. This was to be able to get to the step where you can get in a lottery for a license.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
That's the Dikembe Mutombo of blocks right there.
Yeah. See what I'm saying? Yeah. So
that's the big finger. That's that one right there.
Yep.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, like for him, you know, and again, man, not like, you know, there's nothing I could say. I felt bad for him, you know, and I understood, you know, from, you know, his disappointment, you know, rightfully so. But the one thing I'll give to him that I love about him is his resolve. You know what I'm saying? And he has resolved himself to, you know, at some point, you know, I'm coming home. I'm coming back to Chicago. You know what I'm saying? He had to leave to become he had to leave Chicago in order to become who he is now so that he can come back to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And at some point, in some way, shape, or fashion. So
yeah, the majority of black people in Chicago are treated and sometime are perpetuated to think like second class citizens. And anytime you disrupt that. You disrupt that social order, as they call it, man. Listen,
I was gonna piss you off, didn't I?
Yeah, I already know because I understand. I know how that city moves and thinks and operates, bro.
Right.
You know. So, you know, even going back to when they thought they poisoned Harold Washington because he was the first black mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but let's move on. All right.
Yeah. So
what is the next step for Leo? And how do you want to, you know, end this conversation as far as the takeaways or what you want people to know about how they can support you? And, you know, what do you need the community to do to help you win?
At this point, you know, what I need the community to do is to, you know, allow yourselves to become formally educated about this industry. You know, this industry needs to be culturally adopted by us. You know, I'm accustomed to going into a Dunkin' Donuts and it's, you know, it's always filled with Indian, with, you know, people from India.
Right.
You
know, we need to do cannabis like they.
This needs to be a African-American thing. I think that stewardship of the industry would make for good restitution, not reparations, but restitution, you know, for the way this industry, the way this was played out on us.
Right.
And in order for us to be good
stewards. There's always that unconscious bias, man. We act like we don't know it's there, but it's there and it's always going to be there and it ain't never going nowhere. So it's either you be aggressive and you get on top of your business and you say, yo, we right here. We got the money. We qualified. Give us our shit or you're going to be left out. Don't be waiting on them to say, oh, you know what? What about, Jermaine and them? They ain't doing it, bro. They think about themselves. Think about yourself.
Well, we have to, and that's why we have to be, and it's through the education is how we have to become, we have to get re-engaged in the political process.
Right.
We have to re-realize our political power. For instance, you know, there's examples of that. Just look at what happened to Joe Biden in South Carolina. You know what I'm saying? His campaign was all but dead. Now he's, you know what I'm saying? And all because, you know, black people in South Carolina blew his ass up. And now look at what happened.
Well, yeah, just got to, listen, being a minority is a science. Voting and having to ask for your vote is a science that we weren't taught to even explore. You know,
well, when you have efforts made to silence that.
Yeah. No, but still, it's like, bro, listen, if we could go through all the stuff we go through and argue amongst ourselves like we can, then there's no way we can't do that 10 times harder when it comes to something that affects us so much. Like,
but that's wait. But that's part of our problem as a people.
Right.
You know, like here in New Jersey, what I'm battling with, you know, we're voting for adult use in November. And right. I've been kind of going a little hard on black leadership in the state of New Jersey, really hard because, you know, should New Jersey vote? We go straight to number two behind California in terms of revenue, blah, 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 right? Here's the thing. In New Jersey, black leadership has villainized the making of money in this industry so much so that as a community, we never actually had a comprehensive conversation about the making of money. Once you start talking about decriminalization, social justice, and stuff like that, the economic impact stops. That conversation is never had, which retards our involvement in this, in the legal industry.
Right. Well, I just think that people don't understand that social justice and economics run hand in hand.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Because if you have an economic base and an economic power structure, then you're going to be treated differently social. And that's just how it is in America.
But
that's just how it
is.
This country is a company.
But here's the thing: we check out. That's the thing. We literally check out. We're so mad. I ain't voting. And you got we're breaking our murder record here. Okay. Right. Our city council is atrocious. You know what I'm saying? You know, we have our children it's really bad. We have a really bad gang problem here as well. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and you know, I know about that.
Yeah, it's really bad. Crips and Bloods and Latin King, all that stuff. They shooting and killing people on the streets. You know what I'm saying? It's bad here. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like the rest of the country. Now, here's the thing, you know, in this town, only 8,000 people are voting. So as far as I'm concerned, what we have a substandard school system. We have a police department that's completely off mission statement. We have a city council that's off the rails. You see what I'm saying? And what we, so this is what you look. This is what it looks like when the majority of the people check out for whatever reason.
Whether sounds really primitive,
but it's the truth. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's the what is. And so my thing is that, you know, the whole getting educated in terms of the cannabis industry. The one thing about this entire cannabis journey for me is that it's been the biggest civics lesson of my life.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And
you're
and,
a professor.
And, yeah. And you know what?
You know what? We need to get you at an HBCU teaching a class.
Listen, man, that would be, you know, that would be a misuse of my talents.
Okay, sorry.
You don't want them kids talking to me.
Well, we need you somewhere, man.
You really?
Well, you know what? Well, you're gonna be a recurring guest on Black Tech Matters podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't mind shaking things up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, I have seen and done the worst that man can do to man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And when that happens, particularly on a continuous basis, your value system changes real quick. You know what I'm saying? You know, and so for me, you know, like, I'll be honest with you, you know, when you're in the midst of this.
I just had a thought. Mm-hmm. And I hate when interviewers cut people off. Just had a thought. So is there any way that you can do a study, right, of people in different states who have PTSD and they start using cannabis and there's a study on their brain to where you can tell that whatever the indicator is for PTSD starts to decrease over the time with the use of cannabis, and it's a controlled study. And then you add those people to the lawsuit. Is there a way you can do that or not?
Well, they're already doing those kinds of studies. Look up
Dr.
Joy Beckerman. You know what I'm saying? And look up the things that she's doing, particularly when it comes to veterans. So shout out to Joy, you know, and also.
So the veterans are leading the way.
To you know what? And
because you can't deny the veterans. You can't deny them.
Yeah, quietly. Yeah. Because, you know, like when I'm inside that, and I tell people this all the time. When I'm inside that state house and I'm hooping and hollering, they talk to me different than they talk to you. You know what I'm saying? Because there's something about that veteran voice. Shout out to Ken Wolski, Jim Miller, and Lefty Grimes, because they were the ones who showed me, you know, like, who said, like, hey, we could really use your help when we was doing PTSD. And I was like, okay. And they were telling me how strong the veteran voice is, but they didn't have it at the time like this. And I said, well, shit, absolutely. Tell me what to do. And they told me what to do. I took my ass up in that state house and I went off. Then I went down to the War Memorial Building and met with the Medical Marijuana Review Board. Went off on their asses. Then turned back around and started, you know, like just laying it out. Like, this is what it is. You know, because at that time, the number 22 veteran suicides a day, that was a brand new number.
Wow.
That just came out. You know what I'm saying? And it's 5 a week in New Jersey. You see what I'm saying? So it's, and people don't realize, you know, that veteran suicide thing, and that shit is real.
Yeah, it is.
It is real. You know what I'm saying? I got 4 friends who attempted. 3 were successful. You know what I'm saying? So it's like man, people don't get it. Like, people don't understand. Like, yo, they are like, you like, put it like this, Chuck. We have more veterans. We have more Vietnam veterans who came home and killed themselves than actually died in the war.
Wow.
And Pete this, Chuck.
That's crazy.
We passed that number years ago.
And so you think cannabis or CBD or THC, independently or together, can reduce that number?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. Because what it is it's the hold on for a second.
It's cool.
Say hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm so good.
Oh, well, good for you. I'm good, too. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, sorry about that. Look, don't upset that you're still talking. Sorry about that.
Hey, it's no big deal, man. You know, Black fatherhood matters.
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is an informal. This is a formal, informal setting.
Yeah. That's the 4-year-old.
Yeah, no, and you're the guest. You're the guest, so you know it's not like it's bad for your kid to come in because maybe he needs to hear some of this so he can rewatch it once it's over. Because I try to.
Well, interesting thing, when I was testifying in Senate committee, and there's pictures and stuff, but you can't. Most people don't realize this, but when I was doing this, when I was testifying in Senate committee, right behind me is my oldest.
Right.
You know, I brought him. I wanted him to know what it was like to see his. Go, man. Just go. Go ahead, man. Hold up, sis. Close the door. Daddy's still talking. Langston, close the door. Close the door. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry up. Come on. This is room. Sorry.
No big deal, bro.
So what? The thing is when I was doing that testifying and everything like that, because that was over the summer, my son was here. And so I was bringing him with me and just having him sit right behind me in the audience on the front row, you know, take your book, because he had to sit there and listen, because I wanted him to know, I wanted him to see what it was like to see his dad, you know, when men talk to each other, when adults talk to each other. And, you know, and to learn how to be comfortable in those types of settings.
Right, and to stand up for himself in an articulate way, no matter who he's in front of.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it all that does is it builds that foundation so that no matter who he stands in front of, you know, he's secure enough with himself and he has enough of a self identity and pride within himself that he's not, the one thing he ain't doing is he ain't doing that. No, you look a man in the eye, shake hand, put a little grip, all that stuff, you know,
speak with conviction.
Correct. You know, and so these are all the things that a lot of times we can say it all we want, but when you can actually demonstrate.
No, they got to see the example.
Exactly. And so, but
and nothing supersedes that.
And then also, you know, when you want to fight for something, you know what I'm saying? If you truly believe in it, you know what I'm saying? How far are you willing to go? Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, I got to, you know, physically, visually show my son just how far I'm willing to go, including as far as the Supreme Court. That's how far I'm willing to go. And the thing is that, you know, I recognized a long time ago, you know, how powerful that was in of itself, just because, you know, I had somebody jump at me one day and was like, you know, what have you done? That's what they said. What have you done? And I looked and I said, let me tell you something. You can go on the New Jersey state government website and you can pull up the audio tapes and you can hear my voice and you can actually hear me testifying, saying, giving my remarks, speaking, doing the things that actually change laws.
You know what's so a new rule for us now, Leo?
Huh?
The leaders and the first movers out here, the leaders. You know what the new rule is for us?
Mm.
It's wise men don't argue with fools.
And that was the thing. You know, I had to learn to realize that. And I learned this in this instant too, that the one thing that I cannot do is, and I don't have the bandwidth for, is to sit there and trade barbs with somebody who's not on the same level as I am.
Yeah, because they don't understand.
Because you're not moving. You're not moving like I need to be able to move.
Right, and they can't even pick up on the frequency, the energy, and the wavelengths. That's how I know.
If you don't pick up
on the frequency, the energy, and the wavelength, and I have to end this segment, and I'm going to bring you back on. But when we met, we were at the, Black
BBC.
What was it called again? The Black
the Black Caucus?
No,
the EBC.
It was the Black Tech Conference in Miami.
Yeah, EBC. Black Tech Week.
Yeah, Black Tech Week Miami.
Black Tech Week. Yeah.
And we were in the center where they were having the event, and they were talking about cannabis, and we were just in there eating. I think I had went across the street to the Soul Food spot, and got me some food, and he was like, "Man, brother." I see you hungry. I'm like, man, I ain't eaten nothing all day. I've been in here trying to soak in all this information from all these people of notoriety.
That's the only thing I hate about the real good-ass
And shout out to Space Call Tribe and Black Tech Week Miami. it was a really good experience, and they had really good quality speakers and high quality people. But me and you basically were kind of like, man, what does he do? And then you like, hey, brother, here's my card, this and that. It wasn't no like unnecessary tension or none of that, because we both picked up on the frequency. Like, listen, bro, the wavelength is excellence, and we both see it. And then we just going to try to figure out how we can use it to mm-hmm. mean something bigger for us mm-hmm. and our community. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I have to go. But what do you want to leave with?
You know what? You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Everything's Leo Bridgewater. You know, and also check out CWCBeducation.com and CWCBexpo.com. You know, we're always putting out, you know, what our next webinar is, you know, who our next speakers are going to be, you know, and also the virtual expo we're going to put on later on this year. And then it's all to get you set up for the eventuality of when the face-to-face, the person-to-person conference picks up again. And that won't be until sometime in 2021. And so in this way, you know, because all of this is in response to COVID and how we have to maneuver and shift the way we do business now.
Okay. And I think the next time we have you on, I want to have you on with the young guy who you spoke about. With the
Shayun.
Yeah, Shayun.
Dated G.
I think
yeah,
that'll
look
be a
up.
Great conversation to have yeah, both it's, you guys on.
Yeah, he's ELEV, the number 8, Elevate Cannabis. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hook that up for me, and we'll try to put some things together. And you know, there's a few people in Illinois that I know. That I don't know if he knows, and I'm not making any promises, but we're going to try to get this brother.
I got your email address, so I'll put the two of you on an email. I'll do an email intro.
Cool.
Too easy.
Well,
you didn't say nothing about a word.
Black Tech Matters Special Edition, Leeway Bridgewater suing Department of Justice to get cannabis descheduled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
Huge for me. Mm-hmm. We already were cool, but at the same time, I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I want to bring you back on a few more times because this is the stuff that people need to hear and know about what's going on.
Yeah, and also keep your eye out for the Smoking Heroes podcast, too. I'll be hosting that, too, as well.
Okay.
so I'll make sure you know everything. I'll keep you in the loop.
I'm about to educate myself way more on this subject. All right?
No doubt, man. No doubt. All right, later, bro. No doubt, man. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Black Tech Matters podcast. We hope you enjoy. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Black Tech Matters 2 and on Twitter at Black Tech Matters.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.